Welcome to another episode of the Wolkenkicken podcast. Wolkenkicken is a German word meaning cloud gazing. And this is what we like to do with friends, not just cloud gazing, but spending time without having the need to be productive or doing anything specific. And the next conversation is a great example of this when Evan came over. And in this episode, Evan and Sunny talk about the play that they worked on together, where Sunny made the costumes and Evan was one of the performers. The play was called Palmaris. It leads on to many different topics, actually, so it's hard for me to summarize this in the introduction. But if you ever wanted to know how a drummer really feels, Evan gives a great example and a great description of that. So that's definitely a takeaway. But there are many other topics that were touched, and well, we hope you will enjoy listening.
Hey, so Evan,
hey.
Nice you're here.
I'm here,
and
we're here.
We're all here, and it's exciting to have you as part of this project. And yeah, we know each other from back in Germany. You came with Rocky as a drummer in his band.
That was the first time I think we really spent time, but we go, I think, a little bit further back, just kind of in orbit because of like Tomer and Tutu and like,
yeah,
I've been around them since I was 12,
you know what I mean? Like, so 12 you're one of the dream team, maybe even, Venice dream team.
Wow. No, I wasn't in that. That was like that group where they had like they were doing photography and all that. So, yeah, no, I didn't do that. I knew about them. Yeah. I knew them, I think, a little bit after they were, or while they were doing that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, it's like, you know, my life is full of amazing artists, and you're definitely one of them. And with the latest project, the Palmaris play, mm-hmm. I mean, we definitely got to know each other better through that, mm-hmm. too. And now you're here, and we're just diving into some kind of a deeper meaning of
what's up Singa. You know what's funny with the Palmaris play, I had no idea why I was doing it. I made reasons up, but it was just like everything was like yes, and part of the reason I was doing this because Chandler asked me to do it, and Chandler's the homie and he's done so much for us through the years, so I'm just like, that was a part of it, but the rest of it was like, how does this benefit me? I don't know, but we'll find it. And like, since that play, I've connected with all these people in a deeper way. Like, Singa and I have made music together. Oshunde and I met, and like, you and I kind of reconnected. And because of that, I got those pants. And like, because of the pants I had in the play, I was like, I need pants like this to wear like all the time.
Nice. No, I mean, this play was something magical somehow. It's like every time we met, and you know, people like, you know, Oshunde was there every single time, you know, and he could have just come once or twice to get the, you know, part, but he was there every single time. And I think everybody that was involved felt the deep meaning of this. And it was special. I mean, took us to Hollywood, into like the small theaters of Hollywood, and I think it was like the real thing somehow. You know how Hollywood gets really kind of just superficial more and more, and going down the downhill, you know, like that play did something, I think, for most people, for everybody that was involved.
Yeah. I'm looking at like Hollywood and the role. My wife also is like a costumer in Hollywood, so it's like what I'm seeing more and more is like this. It's one of the machines of like, it's like one of these tools of kind of power, even to controlling imagery. Same way with like news and organizations and all that kind of stuff. But on the creative front, all these movies and all these this industry around it is like putting specific imagery out and kind of enhancing and putting budgets behind specific imagery, while also like having thousands of people they employ in the process. So it's like it's kind of like what happens with the police union, where there's this like necessary thing for it to feed itself. You know what I mean? Where it's like, it starts off with a purpose, then there's an infrastructure and there's people that depend on that infrastructure. And so now they have to hold up this infrastructure, whether or not that infrastructure is doing something good or not, which, you know, there's always good intention and there's always good in the start, but sometimes stuff goes off the rails. Yeah. But like something was very pure. And I think that's what people gravitate towards theater for, because there's something a little bit less manipulative, it feels. Mm-hmm. It feels more like, or like raw expressions a lot of the times. And maybe I'm not seeing through it, but
yeah,
it's usually like subversive, you know what I mean? There's a lot more like subversive messages that come through.
Yeah, it's in the moment. First. Yeah, and it's in the moment. Yeah. You cannot retake it. You know, it's just like there. It's almost like a gig, right? Mm-hmm. When you're on stage with a band, it's right there in the moment, and you know, it hopefully works out if there's no retaking.
Yeah.
You know? But yeah, and it wasn't about money. It was just about being part of the project. You know, there was not much money involved at all, and everybody gave so much of their time and energy.
Wanted it to be good.
Yeah. It, somehow the notch was really high, and people were there every time if they possibly could, and I think that was special. Yeah.
Yeah.
And the community that was, you know, part of it, like the big picture. There were so many people involved, and I think that feeling of community, you know, every time we come together.
Yeah. That's becoming increasingly more and more important as I mature. Uh-huh. I think getting married put me in this very nuclear headspace that, like, after years of that, after like maybe 3-4 years of like getting really like, all right, we got our thing super tight, where like a lot of the times my wife and I don't have to say anything and we can just kind of give the look, which she may argue I misunderstand. She probably would say I misunderstand that a lot of the time, but at least there's like an element of that for us to interpret. But now it's just like, all right, the thing that's going to benefit this the most is because community is by like looking outward and seeing how we can both be of service to people around us. Mm-hmm. And that's been kind of like a very rewarding transition or kind of perspective shift, I guess.
Hmm. Yeah, do you feel like in LA it's shifted in general, that people are more, before, you know, back in the days it was all about me, kind of, you know, everybody's really into what they needed for themselves, and I feel like, you know, LA has changed in that sense where it's more about community.
Yeah. I think we're in a lucky group. I think we're around people who care about that kind of thing.
It's
because
not everywhere, yeah.
It's not everywhere, and there's the bunker builders too, you know what I mean? There's a lot of things happening in LA right now. Some great, some horrific.
Yeah.
I think we're very fortunate that we're with people who are attempting to think in this communal way. How can we help? How can we, even with these horrific things happening, you know, we walk a few blocks away, we'll see people in very like, maybe not here. Further towards the freeway, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. You'll start seeing people with like very, what at least appears to us to be very unfortunate life conditions.
Mm.
And I'm going to say appears to be because I also don't know what's going on in some of their heads. And some of their heads, if they're in bliss, then more power to them. And I encourage everybody to follow their bliss.
Mm-hmm.
But from the outside looking in, that's not what it feels like when you see it. And that could be a projection.
Mm-hmm.
But because there is that projection, I think the goal and the mission is, all right, how can I give to them? Not give to them the thing that I think they need based off to make me feel good about me.
Mm-hmm.
Like, what do you need anything?
Mm-hmm.
And they may not need anything. They may just like, I just don't want to shower and I just don't want to I don't want to have to pay rent and I don't want to deal or have my name in any system. So I'm just whatever. You know what I mean? Or I just might want to just take drugs all day, every day. And I feel good about that. And that's, you know, people would argue that there's something wrong or that there's something wrong with them for wanting to do that. And they're trying to fix something underlying, which could be true. But at the same time, if it results in bliss, then...
Yeah, we had that conversation earlier. I might not have the proper English words for it, but the letter.
It was about the
rescuer and the victim and the
perpetrator.
Perpetrator. Okay, that word.
It's like a triangle, and so that's one of the psychological models that people use to explain situations. And if you. If someone identifies as a victim or as a
savior,
then it always would need a perpetrator. Otherwise, this whole model wouldn't function. So if someone wants to, has this...
Perpetrate the situation, meaning?
No, abuse people or be the mean guy in the play, so to say. And as long as we play on that level... We need this. We always need the perpetrator. We need the villain. And this is partly because of the identification with this victimhood mentality.
Mm-hmm. And we want to help people. I mean, that's me. You know, I always want to help people. Yeah. And it's who am I to help? You know, what I think is not good, you know. So that's maybe, you know, walking up to the homeless or whatever, thinking... I can help.
Maybe they don't want my help.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah,
and even with best friends, you know, sometimes you're like, oh, I need to help you, you know. Mm-hmm. It's like, no, maybe not.
Maybe not.
And that's the thing that's right now, I think it's important for all of us to, you know, help yourself, make sure you're in positive, surroundings and for yourself, make peace with yourself within, right?
And find the opportunities. The opportunities kind of jump out at you to help.
Mm.
Usually it's the same person, if they come to you asking for something, don't just turn a blind eye how do I know I can help you? Then they're telling you that you can help them.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, versus I see you and I want to help you. And then I never thought of it that way of making oneself a victim. I've always been repulsed to that feeling and don't like seeing it in other people either. And but never thought about that idea of making someone else a victim. You know what I mean? Just you're suffering. You're suffering. I have the ability to rescue you. That's both of them can be equally as toxic if you think about it. I've never thought about it that way.
Yeah, because it also, you take the power away from the person you're trying to save. You basically signal to them that they can't help themselves.
Mm-hmm.
So...
And it's difficult as a mother, you know, as a mother, you always think you have to help your children, right? Mm. So it's just this thing, I bet you don't really, you know, especially at a certain age, you know, just let go and trust and you know, not try to help all the time.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's not easy always.
I remember pushing back as a child against my dad with that, him kind of showing me this is the right way to do something, and this is how you do it. Even something simple washing your clothes or do this, and if I didn't do it in this exact way, he would step in and I always kind of was aware that wasn't allowing me to explore problem solving, really, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. so it's thinking about that as I kind of think of myself of transitioning to wanting to be a parent, it's how do you resist that urge to to be a rescuer? You know what I mean? How do you not make your child a victim of the world?
Yeah.
It seems very difficult to do for someone you love so much.
Mm.
Especially because you have to, in the beginning, obviously, you have to take care of everything for your child.
Yeah.
And at some point...
You don't.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And
little by little, they need you less and less.
Shift. is I can imagine.
But it's that energy of love, you know, it's like you love them and you let them also being hurt sometimes, because the world is not always, you know, good, and you know, so it's almost like even, you know, kind of teach them how to fight in a certain way, even though if you want them to be safe all the time, if you never teach them how to fight, you know,
they'll be safe.
Exactly.
So they'll always be victims. They'll always yeah. That's heavy. And I appreciate that though.
But you do capoeira too, right? Talking about.
Yeah. I'm not as consistent as some of my friends, but I've been around it for a very long time and practiced in spurts.
Yeah. And you drum, like you drum at the
events too. That's kind of been my gateway into everything good that's happened. The drums. Yeah, it's funny with this production journey. Like at one point in life, I got it in my head that I meant I should play less drums.
And it doesn't work.
That was like the opposite. That was the dumbest thing I could have thought for myself. It's like this one thing that's been giving me so many good things all this time, whether it was connections, whether it was opportunities to travel, whether it was money, whether it was like being able to survive and not get like a regular job that I tried because I wanted money when I was like a teenager and like early 20s. And I tried getting regular jobs and I was just like, no, this has to work. Like, I can't do anything else. I can't. This is too much time I'm giving away not making music.
Yeah, so well, like, yeah, you managed to make your living with music.
I mean, drums have been the gift that keep giving, and obviously other things, but like that has always been like sort of the gateway into like putting things into existence.
Do you feel like, you know, when I make clothing, like when I get to my sewing machine and I'm sewing, even if it's just a stupid pillow or something, you know, I feel like there's something on the other side that's just really excited for me to get creative, you know, and you feel the same with drumming?
Absolutely. I mean, the thing about drumming is it's like, I've been doing it since I was a baby. So it's like, if I think about drumming, I'm already doing it. It's like, it's usually either it's happening in my head, my fingers are tapping, like I'm tapping something in my head. I'm like biting my butt, chomp down on my teeth sometimes rhythmically. Like I do a lot of, it's somewhere in my body, if it's in the ether, it's happening.
Okay.
In my body before I realize it's happening.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, and so sometimes I realize it's happening, it's just like, oh, okay, this is happening. I need to like go sit down and like actually let this out. Other times, like, I can't do that. And other times I have like life stuff happening. I'm like at the grocery store or something like that. Or like, but even then I'll just take my phone out and record a voice note. And like, yeah, I can show you. I have like hundreds of developed musical ideas and voice notes. And every once in a while, I'll just pull up a voice note and start something from there.
That's
so
yeah, I mean, and you say you've had it as a baby, you know, that's like, yeah, singer was drumming in my belly, you know, it's like they just came with him, you know, it wasn't part, you know, something that came later, it was just there.
It's definitely, I see it's a, what's the word, like a channel, like a transmission with him. It's just not something I'm talking about you, Singa. It's not something he's trying to do. He just kind of gets out of the way, and that's
it. But it's probably
it.
The same it. For you then. Like
at his best, like I said, growing up here is especially becoming an adult here. It costs so much to stay alive here, or to live comfortably. I should say it should cost so much to live comfortably and happily here. That I think at the beginning of my career, it was definitely, it kind of had a little bit of a stranglehold with this thing that had been so pure my entire life, like figuring out how to make money off of it. And there's elements of that I'm still like shaking off little pieces of armor that are like sticking to me because of it. But yeah, I think at its best, yes, I'm getting out of the way. When I'm playing drums the best, I'm not even really doing it. I'm like trusting that my chops are going to come out as I need them, but I'm not forget about my chops. It's like, I hear this, the music needs this. This isn't about, like, I'm out of the way completely. Same thing with the creative flow. Like if it, I've been around people who create and who I really like what they do, and I've seen their process, and it's very, very patient and very like cycling through till they find the best base, and then the next level, and then they're just cycling through till they find that level. And I'm like the opposite. I'm just like, when I'm at my most fluid, it's like boom, 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 boom. I don't like this so much. So it never really takes me longer than like 5 minutes, maybe 2 minutes, to like figure out a next part that I'm like adding to something. So like five tops. And if in 5 minutes it's not happening, then I'm just like, all right, well, that's not the instrument. And I just get up and walk away until the next thing comes in. You know what I mean? I'm like, oh, I hear this. So then I find the instrument. You know what I mean? So it's like the goal, I think, at its best, which I think sing as good as this, is like just staying in that flow. Just like, just really not judging any part of it. Not forcing any part of it. But like wherever it is in the moment, just keep going. Just keep going, keep going, keep going, and edit later. And then editing, once you do it that way, then once you get to editing, that becomes its own creative flow that you're jumping from one thing to the next, because, you know, as you change one thing, certain things pop out and other things, you know what I mean? And they kind of fit together like a puzzle. Which, as creative as I am, that's my favorite part about music, is like the tactile puzzle piece, things fitting together, like.
And then it becomes organization. A working process, right? Then it does take more time, and it's all about creating beauty, you know. And maybe like back in the days, like where everything took so much more time, and it was so much more, you know, real, and like the real materials, like, you know, raw wood, and you turn it into. Yeah. Now it's like plastic, and, you know, quick, and then even songs, like the songs that you hear on the radio, are like,
you're 3D, you know, printing it now.
Yeah. So it's interesting how maybe it's all about going back to, you know, being more real, being more, taking more time to create things, and and letting it develop, and walking away when it's not flowing, you know, instead of, no, now you gotta create this piece no matter what. But no, let's just.
Or even like not even taking more time in the sense that it has to take longer. It's just like actually giving the time. Just like, this is what I'm doing right now, and this is the only thing I'm doing right now, and I'm not worrying about how I'm gonna eat. I'm not gonna just make sure there's an apple sitting somewhere close by, and like in some water, and like, no, this is I'm not worrying about the next paycheck. I'm not worrying about my next bills. It's just like, no, this is the time for this. And it's like similar with like meditation. I hear a lot, like when I do yoga classes, and like those little, like before and after meditations, they're like, this is your moment, like leave behind all these things, this is for you. And so it's kind of like giving permission. If you hadn't already given yourself that permission, it's like a reminder, like, all right, really, this is what you're here for. You know what I mean? You're here for you right now. You're not here for figuring out how to pay this bill.
Or
figuring out what you're going to say to this client. You know what I mean? That's not why you're here, for you. And when you get up and leave, then you can think about that with the same like level of intense
living in the moment
focus.
And it sounds like the way you described it is that you kind of step aside to let creation happen through you in that moment. And then even when you do the editing part, which is normally could be tedious work, you might notice that things just fall into place because they've been kind of channeled through you. So they, like, as if, well, I'm making this up now, but as if spirit is working through you and knows that the parts that you are recording there, or the choices that you make, they will fit together well. Is it, would you say that's kind of what's happening? Or
there is an element of spirit. The choices. I think the goal of making the choices is to make it more in harmony with the transmission, so that there's not, I'm imagining what this feels like now. So it feels like before you start, there's this transmission of things that's coming through. So then you start piecing it together based off of what you hear, right? And I'm not gonna say never. It's never perfectly that same thing. because you're having to put it in like three-dimensional sound space, right? You're having to bring it to earth. So it's never quite the same feeling, but you can get really, really, really close to where it's like, ooh, this feels good. And like you're tweaking things, and as you're tweaking things, it's kind of like if you go to the eye doctor and they're flipping through lenses, and like, you know, you go in and you think your vision's clear, and then they put on something, they're like, oh shit, like I can see more now, you know what I mean? So it's kind of like this thing of like you're flipping through lenses and you make decisions, and sometimes those decisions make things more blurry in comparison to the transmission that you're receiving. And until it gets like its most clear version, which it may not be perfect. Like I said, I don't think you ever really get to be that, but you are that the whole time you're doing it. And I said that's what it is. It's like you're getting this transition, this transmission, embodying the transmission to create sort of a facsimile of it that people can hear, and it's not just in your head anymore.
Interesting.
I guess beautiful. That's the way of putting it.
Beautiful.
So I don't know who I give credit to. You know what I mean? I don't think I've gotten past the point of taking credit or giving anything outside of me credit. It just feels like this is something that already exists, and like we were talking about earlier with frequency, it's like whatever, even if momentarily just tapping into some specific bandwidth of frequency and just like in the process being aware of when I'm being pulled out of it, just like whatever. And it might be the dumbest thing. It might be text messages coming through too much. It might be like I had too much coffee before the session and like my heart's beating and it's distracting me from paying close attention. It could be, that's why all that music in the 80s sounds the way it does, is because they were all on cocaine. You know what I mean? All the engineers, most of the session musicians, it was like, not all of them, not everybody, but like it was ubiquitous. It was like 80-90% of the studios. Someone told me a crazy story. This engineer was telling me that like back in the day, if a studio was booking a session with a record label or with an artist through a record label, what they would do is they would have just like a mountain of coke already there when the artists show up, and they build it as like dinner for six or something like that. You know what I mean? And under the official records, it's dinner for six is what they call it, or eight or something like that. Dinner for blah, blah, blah. But it would be this mountain of coke that would be there when they showed up. So then the artist would get that. Can I curse? Is it?
Yeah, sure.
I was like, I felt it coming. I don't have to now that I felt it coming. But like they would get there. There's this mountains of coke. And then the artists and producers and everybody in the room would just do a bunch of coke, get nothing done. And then they would have to book more studio time to get something done. Basically.
Mm-hmm.
So it was like double dipping every time by just getting people high on coke.
It's interesting how that was. I think we're moving away from that, you know, tapping into the natural high and really connecting to something higher and not needing
both,
that.
Both are happening. People like psychedelics are being more accepted in culture as well.
That's right.
And it's being put in medical facilities and stuff. So it's like, I think with something like that, where you can guide people towards this release of addiction or release of PTSD and all these kinds of things, like that, I think is promising. I do see addictive behaviors just being turned towards psychedelics, which can be concerning. But, you know, like I said, if it equals bliss, you can't miss.
That's good. If it equals bliss, you can't miss. Maybe that's a good fine line.
If it equals bliss, you didn't miss. There it is. Yeah.
Thank you for listening to this conversation, and we certainly hope that you found some gems in it. And if you like, listen to the next episode that will come out soon.